The sun was beginning to set over Jerusalem as heavy clouds darkened the sky. The air, thick and oppressive, seemed charged with an unearthly portent. On the hill of Golgotha, three crosses stood tall against the horizon, sinister silhouettes that spoke of Rome's power and cruelty. The Roman centurion stood his ground, his face impassive enough to be forged only by years of battle. He had overseen dozens of crucifixions before, but this one was different. The man in the center, Jesus of Nazareth, had displayed an unwavering dignity throughout his ordeal. This was no ordinary day, no ordinary crucifixion. Raised in Roman polytheism, the centurion was accustomed to believing in multiple gods. For him, claiming to be a son of God would not be unusual, for there would be many in his pantheon. Even Emperor Augustus called himself the Son of God. The crowd's shouts of derision had died down. Many had turned away, uncomfortable with the unnatural darkening of the midday sky. Now, after 6 hours of agony, the Nazarene raised his head for the last time and exclaimed in a surprisingly loud voice for one so close to death, "Father, into your hands I commend my spirit." An absolute silence descended upon Golgotha. Jesus bowed his head and breathed his last. At that precise moment, the earth began to shake violently beneath the centurion's feet. The rocks creaked and split open into deep fissures. Far away in the temple, the enormous veil that covered the most holy place was torn from top to bottom, visible from a distance to all who looked in that direction. The centurion's face, accustomed to remaining impassive before the horror of battle, now reflected an indescribable astonishment. His eyes, fixed on the lifeless body of the crucified man, were filled with a sudden and overwhelming understanding. What had this seasoned soldier witnessed that led him to make such a statement? Matthew tells us that he witnessed something extraordinary. After Jesus took his last breath, the veil of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. The earth shook, the rocks split, and the tombs opened. The soldiers under his command, men hardened by battle, looked at one another in terror. The centurion, raising his voice so that all could hear, uttered words that no one would have expected from a representative of the Roman imperial power. Truly, this man was the Son of God. Jewish law forbade bodies from remaining on crosses during the Sabbath, especially on such an important Passover. The religious leaders had asked Pilate to hasten the death of the crucified. The order came: break the legs of the condemned men so that they would die of asphyxiation, unable to propel themselves to breathe. The soldiers did their duty. They broke the legs of the two criminals who were hanging on either side of Jesus. However, when they reached the Nazarene, they found that he was already dead. One of the soldiers, to be sure, took his spear, raised it with the precision acquired through years of training, and thrust it into Jesus' side, between the ribs, aiming for the heart. What happened then would remain etched in the memory of all present. Instead of the scant bleeding typical of a corpse, a copious flow of blood and water gushed from the wound. This phenomenon, medically explainable today as evidence of pericardial fluid mixed with blood, seemed to confirm the extraordinary nature of that death. The soldier pierced Jesus' side with his spear to verify that he was truly dead. When he did, water and blood flowed from the wound, a mixture that could have occurred for various medical reasons, whether due to the natural separation of blood components after death, fluid accumulated in the lungs or stomach, or fluid in the pericardium as a result of a coronary rupture. The evangelist John, the only one of the gospel writers who was an eyewitness, would recall this moment years later as the fulfillment of ancient prophecies: "Not a bone of him shall be broken, and they shall look on him whom they have pierced." The identity of the soldier who wielded the spear is not recorded in any of the Gospels. yet his seemingly routine action within the Roman protocol of execution would become one of the most significant and symbolic moments in the Christian narrative. That thrust of the spear, intended simply to confirm a death, would in time be transformed into a symbol of profound theological significance. The first stars were beginning to appear in the sky over Jerusalem when Joseph of Arimathea, having obtained permission from Pilate, arrived at Golgotha to claim the body of Jesus. The centurion and his men stood there still shaken by the supernatural events they had witnessed. The soldier who had wielded the spear watched in silence as the body was lowered from the cross. The instrument he had used so often in battle had now served a different purpose, confirming the death of the most extraordinary man he had ever known. His spear, a standard Roman pilum, measured approximately 2 meters. The iron point, designed to penetrate shields and armor in battle, had easily pierced the space between the crucified man's ribs. Now, stained with that unusual mixture of blood and water, it seemed different to his eyes, as if it had taken on a meaning he could not fully comprehend. In the Roman barracks that night, talk of the strange happenings mingled with the usual noise of soldiers resting after duty. The midday darkness, the earthquake, the centurion's shocking confession, all contributed to an atmosphere of unease among the troops. "I've never seen anyone die like this," one of the younger soldiers remarked as he cleaned his gear. "I've been to dozens of crucifixions," another veteran replied. "But he's never witnessed anything like it." The earth shook as if nature itself were protesting. The soldier with the spear remained silent, lost in thought, as he examined the weapon with which he had pierced Jesus' side. What did this death signify? Why had the centurion, a man respected for his temperance and discipline, openly declared that this Jew was the Son of God? The following morning brought new orders. A detachment was to guard the tomb where the body had been placed. Suspicious Jewish leaders had convinced Pilate to seal the tomb and post guards to prevent the Nazarene's followers from stealing the body and proclaiming a resurrection. The Roman guard was disciplined and effective. A squad of hand-picked soldiers was stationed outside the tomb, taking turns to keep constant watch. The seal of Rome on the stone blocking the entrance warned that any attempt to violate the tomb would be punished with the utmost severity. However, what happened on the third day would completely defy Roman military protocol. The first light of dawn found the guards in a state of panic. Pale and trembling, they told stories of a sudden earthquake, a blinding light, and the stone rolled away beyond human explanation. The rumor spread quickly among the troops. The body was gone. Alarmed Jewish leaders offered bribes to the soldiers to spread the story that the disciples had stolen the body while they were asleep. An explanation that was unlikely to anyone familiar with the strict Roman military discipline, where falling asleep on watch was punishable by death. The soldiers were ordered to break the legs of the crucified men to hasten their deaths. They complied with the two thieves, but when they reached Jesus, they found that he was already dead, so they did not break his legs. Instead, one of the soldiers pierced his side with a spear, causing blood and water to gush out. In the days that followed, Jerusalem was filled with astonishing stories. Disciples of Jesus claimed to have seen him alive. They said that he had appeared among them, shown his wounds, including the one in his side from the spear, and shared meals with them. To the soldier who had wielded that spear, these accounts were disturbing. He knew, with the certainty that only a seasoned warrior could have, that his blow had been true. He had felt the resistance of the flesh, seen the fluid oozing from the wound. The man was definitely dead. How then to explain these testimonies? Were they simply the ravings of desperate followers, or had something beyond human comprehension occurred? The question echoed in his mind as he went about his daily duties. The Roman garrison in Jerusalem continued with its routine in the days and weeks that followed. Yet something had changed. Among some of the soldiers, especially those who had been present at Calvary or had been on duty at the tomb, whispered conversations circulated about what had really happened. The years following the crucifixion saw profound changes in Jerusalem and throughout the Roman world. The small band of Jesus' followers, instead of dispersing after the death of their leader, grew with astonishing speed and determination. Meanwhile, the Roman soldiers, possibly including the one who had pierced Jesus' side, continued with their military assignments. Garrison life followed a strict routine of training, patrols, and maintaining law and order in a province constantly on the brink of rebellion. The biblical account does not indicate what happened to the soldier who pierced Christ's side. However, we do know that Roman soldiers eventually converted to Christianity. The book of Acts records the conversion of Cornelius, a Roman centurion, who, along with his two companions, decided to abandon military service after receiving baptism from the apostles. The life of a Roman soldier was marked by discipline and loyalty to the emperor. The military oath, the sacramentum, established a sacred commitment to Rome and its gods. Renouncing this oath to follow a faith considered subversive required extraordinary conviction. The Roman army of the first century was a complex and multicultural institution. Soldiers came from different provinces, spoke different languages, and worshipped different gods. Auxiliary units stationed in Judea often included recruits from Syria, Cilicia, and other eastern regions. In this diverse environment, religious ideas circulated freely among the troops. Eastern mystery cults, such as Mithraism, gained popularity in the military ranks. Curiosity about the local beliefs of the provinces where they served was common among soldiers, many of whom spent decades stationed in distant lands. The growing Christian community in Jerusalem inevitably came into contact with the Roman military presence. As the Christian message spread, reaching even Samaritans and Gentiles, it would not be surprising if it reached the ears of some soldiers as well. The book of Acts, written approximately 3 decades after the crucifixion, records a notable case. The conversion of Cornelius, a centurion of the so-called Italian Corte, stationed in Caesarea, the Roman administrative capital of Judea. This officer and his entire household embraced the Christian faith after hearing the preaching of the Apostle Peter. Christian tradition has united in the figure of Longinus two characters who appear in the Gospels. The first is the Roman soldier who, according to the Gospel of John, pierced Jesus' side with his spear, from which blood and water flowed. The second is the Roman centurion mentioned in the other Gospels, who, upon seeing Jesus die, made a profession of faith. Truly this man was the Son of God. The case of Cornelius demonstrates that even in the early decades the Christian message found receptivity among some Roman military personnel. While there is no historical record that specifically confirms that the soldier with the spear was converted, the precedent does exist. Roman officers and soldiers who abandoned their former religious allegiance to follow Christ. As the decades passed, the presence of Christians in the Roman army became increasingly noticeable. By the end of the 2nd century, the issue was significant enough for Tertullian to write about the compatibility of military service with the Christian faith. Archaeological excavations at ancient Roman forts have revealed evidence of a Christian presence among the troops. At Dura Europis in Syria, a small house church was discovered within the military complex dating back to the 3rd century. Graffiti and Christian symbols found on barracks and military equipment attest to the growing influence of Christianity within the ranks of the military. The Christian tradition mentioning Longinus emerged centuries later. His name does not appear in the Bible, but rather in the apocryphal Gospel of Nicodemus, several centuries after the crucifixion. Christianity developed his story as that of a convert who claimed to have been blind and regained his sight when blood splattered his eyes. As the Christian faith spread throughout the empire, the figure of the soldier with the spear began to acquire symbolic meaning in early Christian narrative. Although not specifically named in the earliest texts, his action of piercing Christ's side was interpreted as the fulfillment of prophecies and as a symbol of the birth of the sacraments of the church. Early Christian artistic representations, especially on sarcophagi and in the catacombs, began to include the crucifixion scene with the soldier and his spear as a significant element, a visual testimony to the actual death of Christ and its theological significance. Over the centuries, the story of the unnamed soldier who pierced Jesus' side underwent a remarkable transformation. What had been a brief, nameless mention in the canonical Gospels began to take on more defined contours in Christian imagination and devotion. Approximately 3 centuries after the crucifixion, an apocryphal text known as the Gospel of Nicodemus or Acts of Pilate appeared. In this document, not recognized as canonical by the mainline churches, the name Longinus first appears, in association with the soldier who wielded the spear. The name Longinus is not mentioned in the canonical Gospels. It first appears in the apocryphal Gospel of Nicodemus. It probably derives from lonche, loke, the Greek word used in the Gospel of John to refer to the spear, suggesting that the name was later coined from the instrument used. The etymology of the name is revealing. Longinus appears to be derived from the Greek word lonche, loke, meaning spear or spearhead. The same word used in the Gospel of John to describe the weapon that pierced Christ's side. This linguistic coincidence suggests that the name was a later invention, identifying the character by the instrument he used. During the 15th century, as Christianity transformed from a persecuted religion to the official faith of the Roman Empire, stories about Longinus began to multiply and be enriched with new details. Longinus is traditionally venerated as a saint in the Roman Catholic Church, the Eastern Orthodox Church, and other Christian communions. His legend grew over time to the point where it was claimed that he converted to Christianity after his crucifixion. However, as historian Sabin Beringud has observed, Longinus' name was not known to the Greeks before the German patriarch, in 715. One of the most significant additions to the legend was the story of Longinus' partial blindness and miraculous healing. According to this tradition, which does not appear in any source prior to the 10th century, the soldier suffered from vision problems when he carried out his task on Calvary. When he pierced the side of Jesus, some drops of the blood and water that flowed out splashed into his eyes, instantly healing them. This miracle would have caused his immediate conversion. According to this later tradition, Longinus had vision problems when he pierced the side of Christ. When the blood splashed into his eyes, he miraculously recovered his sight, which caused his conversion. For this reason, he became the patron saint of people with eye problems. The story continued with Longinus' abandonment of his military career, his conversion to Christianity, and his eventual martyrdom for refusing to renounce his new faith. Different versions place his death in different places, mainly in Cappadocia, present-day Turkey, or in Caesarea in Cappadocia. As the cult of saints developed in the medieval church, Longinus was included in the official martyrologies. The Roman Catholic Church traditionally celebrated his feast day on March 15, although following the revision of the liturgical calendar in 1969, the commemoration was moved to October 16, in line with the tradition of the Eastern Orthodox Church. Longinus is venerated as a martyr in the Roman Catholic Church, the Eastern Orthodox Church, and the Armenian Apostolic Church. His feast day is celebrated on October 16 in the Roman Martyrology, which mentions him as the soldier who pierced the side of the crucified Lord with a lance. Alongside the veneration of the saint, there arose the cult of the relic of the Holy Lance or Spear of Destiny, supposedly the original weapon that had pierced Christ's side. The first records of the existence of this relic date from the 6th century in Jerusalem. As the veneration of relics intensified during the Middle Ages, several lances claiming to be the authentic one were found preserved in different places throughout Christendom. There are now several lances claiming to be the authentic lance of Longinus that pierced the side of Christ. These include the Vienna lance in the Hofburg Imperial Treasury, the Vatican lance in St. Peter's Basilica, the Mayotin lance in Armenia, and the Krakow lance in Poland. Medieval and Renaissance Christian art immortalized the figure of Longinus in countless depictions of the crucifixion. Initially anonymous, over time he became an easily identifiable figure, often depicted in the moment of conversion or pointing towards Christ with an expression of recognition. One of the most impressive representations is the statue created by Gian Lorenzo Bernini for St. Peter's Basilica in the Vatican. Completed in 1638, it shows an ecstatic Longinus holding the lance while seemingly contemplating a divine vision. Longinus has become a central figure in the Christian narrative, not only because of his peripheral role in the Gospels, but because he embodies the transformation that can come from an encounter with Christ. Although he does not appear by that name in the Bible, his legacy is deeply embedded in Christian tradition. The evolution of this figure from an anonymous Roman soldier to a venerated saint illustrates how religious traditions develop over time, responding to spiritual and didactic needs. The transformation from enemy to devotee, from executioner to witness, provided a powerful message of redemption and conversion. During the centuries of Muslim rule in the Holy Land, traditions about Longinus and the places associated with him were kept alive primarily in Eastern Christian communities, Orthodox, Greek, Armenian, Coptic, and Syrian. These groups preserved the ancient stories and venerated relics associated with the soldier with the spear. The rediscovery of the Holy Land by European crusaders in the 10th to 13th centuries brought renewed interest in relics of the Passion, including the Holy Spear. During the First Crusade, a cleric named Peter Bartholomew claimed to have had visions that revealed to him the location of the Holy Lance buried in the Cathedral of St. Peter in Antioch. The discovery of this supposed relic in 1998 provided a powerful morale boost to the crusaders besieged in Antioch, contributing to their victory over a numerically superior Muslim army. Subsequent controversy over the authenticity of this lance led Peter Bartholomew to subject himself to a fiery ordeal to prove the veracity of his visions, an ordeal that he did not survive. During the First Crusade from 1996 to 1999, the crusaders reported to Pope Innocent use the discovery of a relic they believed to be the Holy Lance. This episode was documented by several contemporary chroniclers, including Geoffrey de Villegardouin and Robert de Clery. Meanwhile, in Constantinople, the Byzantine emperors treasured their own version of the Holy Lance as part of their collection of imperial relics. During the sack of Constantinople during the Fourth Crusade in 1204, this relic was part of the booty taken to the west, specifically to Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris, although its subsequent whereabouts are uncertain. The most famous of the alleged Holy Lances is the one preserved in Vienna, Austria, in the Hofburg Imperial Treasury. This relic, known as the Lance of Saint Maurice, was part of the imperial regalia of the Holy Roman Empire from at least the 10th century. Emperors believed that its possession guaranteed victory in battle and the legitimacy to rule. The Vienna Lance, part of the Hofburg Imperial Treasury, has elements dating to the 7th century with later additions. Metallurgical studies conducted in 2003 confirmed that parts of this lance are consistent with 1st century Roman metalwork, although its oldest components do not appear to predate the 6th century. A disturbing episode in the modern history of this relic occurred during the annexation of Austria by Nazi Germany in 1938. Adolf Hitler, fascinated by the occult and legends about the power of the Spear of Destiny, ordered it transferred to Nuremberg, where it remained until the end of World War II, when it was recovered by Allied forces and returned to Austria. While physical relics made their own way through history, the figure of Longinus continued to evolve in Christian art and literature. His story became a recurring theme in medieval mysteries, dramatic depictions of the Passion, in which the Roman soldier appeared as a symbol of the conversion of the pagan world. In masterpieces such as Matthias Grunewald's The Crucifixion, 1512-16, part of the Eisenheim altarpiece, Longinus is clearly identifiable, often contrasted with the centurion as representing two different responses to Christ's death. Faith based on personal miracle, healing of sight, and faith based on the recognition of Jesus' divinity at the moment of his death. The tradition of Longinus' vision problems and his cure appears from the 10th century onwards. Petrus Chemester, in the 11th century, was one of the first to mention this condition, whose text can be interpreted as meaning that he was blind, weak-sighted, or had diminished vision. The Golden Legend adds that his visual problems could be due to illness or age. Popular devotion to Saint Longinus spread throughout medieval Christendom. As the alleged cure of blindness, he became the patron saint of people with vision problems. Prayers and invocations to Saint Longinus requested his intercession for eye ailments and to obtain spiritual clarity, to see the truths of the faith, as he had seen the divinity of Christ. In some regions, especially in Eastern Europe and Latin America, additional folkloric traditions associated with Longinus arose. In Brazil, for example, Saint Longinus is popularly invoked to find lost objects. An association whose exact origin is uncertain, but which demonstrates the adaptability of agiographic traditions. The story of Longinus, developed over the course of two millennia since his brief anonymous mention in the Gospels, exemplifies how seemingly minor figures in the biblical narratives can acquire profound and enduring meanings in Christian devotion. His narrative transformation reflects the central Christian belief in the possibility of conversion and redemption, even for those who directly participate in Christ's suffering. The Bible is silent on what happened to the soldier who pierced Jesus' side. Unlike other figures in the gospel narratives whose subsequent fates are recorded, there is no biblical mention of his life after the crucifixion. This historical silence is eloquent in itself. The evangelists did not consider it necessary to trace this Roman soldier, whose action, while theologically significant, was simply part of his military duty. John, the only one who explicitly mentions the piercing of the side, is more interested in the symbolism of the water and blood than in the identity or destiny of the man who wielded the spear. However, what we do know with historical certainty is that the Christian message began to penetrate the Roman military ranks from the first decades. The Book of Acts, written approximately between 80 and 90 AD, describes the conversion of the centurion Cornelius and his family as a turning point in the expansion of Christianity to the Gentile world. The Roman army of the first century was a multicultural environment where religious ideas circulated with remarkable freedom. Soldiers, often stationed for decades in distant provinces, adopted local practices and beliefs that they later took with them when they were transferred to other regions of the empire. Archaeological discoveries confirm this reality. Among the graffiti found in Roman military barracks from the 1st and 2nd centuries AD, references appear to various deities, traditional Roman cults alongside Eastern divinities such as Mithra, Isis, and eventually Christ. At the border town of Dura Europus in present-day Syria, excavations have revealed something astonishing. A private house within a Roman military camp had been converted into a Christian church around 235 AD. Its walls, decorated with biblical scenes, attest to the presence of a thriving Christian community among the troops stationed at this remote garrison. As Christianity spread across the empire, the question of Christian soldiers became a subject of debate within the early church. Was military service compatible with faith in Christ? Some church fathers, such as Tertullian, expressed serious reservations, while others took more pragmatic positions. By the end of the 3rd century, the Christian presence in the military had become so significant that Emperor Diocletian, when he launched the last great persecution in 38,530 AD, began by purging Christians from the military ranks, recognizing their growing influence over this vital institution. The culminating transformation would come with Caninus, who after the Battle of the Milvian Bridge in 312 AD, adopted Christian symbols for his troops, beginning the process that would convert Christianity from a persecuted religion into the official faith of the empire. During these early centuries, while the tradition about Longinus had not yet fully developed, the theological symbolism of the spear and the wound in his side acquired profound meaning in Christian thought. Saint Augustine of Hippona, writing at the beginning of the 5th century, interpreted the water and blood that flowed from the wound as symbols of baptism and the Eucharist, the fundamental sacraments of the nascent church. From the open side flowed the sacraments with which the church was formed, wrote Augustine, elevating that routine military action, verifying the death of a crucified man, to an act of cosmic transcendence. In the history of salvation, for early Christians, the importance of that soldier lay not in his personal identity or his subsequent destiny, but in his unwitting role as an instrument of a divine plan. The spear he wielded as it pierced Christ's side unlocked the mystery of redemption. Blood that purifies, water that gives life. After his name appeared in the Gospel of Nicodemus in the 4th-5th centuries, the figure of Longinus began to take on a more defined shape in the Christian imagination. Medieval angiographies produced increasingly detailed narratives of his conversion and martyrdom, responding to the need to complete his story. Various traditions placed his martyrdom in different locations. The most widely held version placed him in Cappadocia, a region of Asia Minor, present-day Turkey, where he was supposedly beheaded for refusing to renounce his Christian faith. His head, according to some traditions, was transferred to Jerusalem and later to Rome. The current Roman martyrology mentions Longinus with considerable caution. In Jerusalem, commemorates Saint Longinus, venerated as the soldier who pierced the side of the crucified Lord with a lance. This careful formulation acknowledges both tradition and its historical limitations. With the growth of devotion to saints and relics during the Middle Ages, multiple claims to the possession of the authentic lance of Longinus arose. Byzantine emperors, European kings, and popes valued this relic not only for its spiritual significance but also as a symbol of power and legitimacy. The Spear of Destiny, as it is also known, acquired almost magical properties in the medieval imagination. Legends claimed that whoever possessed it could not be defeated in battle and therefore held the fate of the world in his hands. This belief surprisingly persisted into the 20th century. The most fascinating aspect of Longinus' evolution as a historical and religious figure is how he transformed from an anonymous soldier carrying out an order into a universal symbol of conversion and witness. His supposed transformation from executioner to martyr embodies the Christian message that no one is beyond redemption. Over the centuries, the figure of Longinus became intertwined with other Christian traditions, particularly the Arthurian legends of the Holy Grail. In some versions of these stories, the spear that pierced Christ's side became one of the sacred treasures guarded by the Grail Knights. Wolfram von Eschenbach's Parafall, written in the early 11th century, features a mysterious bleeding spear associated with the wounding of the Fisher King, guardian of the Grail. Although this weapon possesses magical characteristics inconsistent with Orthodox Christian tradition, later sequels clearly identified it with the Spear of Longinus. Richard Wagner, inspired by these medieval legends, composed his last opera Parafall in 1882, in which the sacred spear takes center stage. In this work, the spear that wounded Christ and the Grail King possesses both destructive and healing powers. Only the spear that caused the wound can heal it, symbolizing the paradox of Christian redemption. This association between Longinus' spear and Arthurian legend exemplifies how religious and mythological traditions intertwine and transform each other over time, creating narratives of profound symbolic meaning that transcend their historical origins. Meanwhile, in the Eastern Orthodox tradition, especially in the Greek and Russian churches, Longinus featured prominently in the iconography of the crucifixion. Typically depicted to the right of the cross from the observer's perspective, his figure contrasted with that of the soldier who offered Jesus the vinegar-soaked sponge, creating a symbolic duality between recognition and rejection. Orthodox icons traditionally depict Longinus with a saintly halo, dressed as a Roman soldier, but with his gaze raised toward Christ, capturing the moment of conversion and recognition. His spear, aimed at Jesus' side, paradoxically becomes an instrument of spiritual revelation rather than of death. In the Armenian Apostolic Church, the veneration of Longinus acquired special importance due to the relic of the Holy Lance preserved for centuries in the Monastery of Gahard, which literally means Monastery of the Lance. According to Armenian tradition, this relic was brought to Armenia by the Apostle Thaddeus in the 1st century. The first Western traveler to document the existence of this relic was Jean Baptist Tavernier, who saw it in Armenia in 1655. Later, after the Russian occupation in 1800, the relic was transferred to Ichmiazin, the seat of the Armenian Patriarchate, where it remains preserved to this day. Popular devotion to Saint Longinus has endured through the centuries in various forms, adapting to different cultural contexts. As a saint associated with healing eye problems, he is frequently invoked by people with visual impairments. Churches dedicated to his name exist in Rome, Mantua, and other European cities. In the Philippines, particularly on the island of Marinduque, the figure of Longinus comes to life every Holy Week during the Moriones Festival. This colorful celebration, which combines elements of street theater and religious procession, reenacts the legend of Longinus, depicted with elaborate Roman masks and costumes. Participants, dressed as Roman centurions with carved wooden masks, parade through the streets reenacting the search and capture of Longinus after his conversion. This tradition, which dates back to the 19th century, vividly illustrates how ancient Christian legends continue to shape contemporary cultural expressions. From a critical historical perspective, it is impossible to determine what actually happened to the soldier who pierced Jesus' side. The elaborate traditions about Longinus, while venerable and significant within Christian piety, lack a contemporary documentary basis for the events they describe. Modern archaeological and documentary studies of the Roman army in Judea during the first century allow us to reconstruct with considerable precision the historical context of the crucifixion. We know which military units were stationed in Jerusalem, how their hierarchy was structured, and what their standard procedures for executions were. The soldiers who participated in crucifixions were generally auxiliary units, not Roman legionaries. These auxiliary troops, recruited from already Romanized provinces, maintained certain aspects of their native cultures while serving under Roman officers and adopted standardized military procedures. The typical career of a Roman soldier lasted 25 years, after which he would receive Roman citizenship, if he had not previously held it, and a plot of land, usually in the province where he had served. Many veterans settled in military colonies, forming communities that contributed to the Romanization of the provinces. It is entirely plausible, though not historically demonstrable, that the soldier who wielded the spear could have subsequently made contact with the nascent Christian community. The Acts of the Apostles documents that there were converts among the Gentiles as early as the first decade after the crucifixion, including Roman officers such as the centurion Cornelius. The historical event of Jesus' crucifixion, involving that unnamed soldier with his spear, set in motion transformations that would reverberate through the centuries. What began as just another execution in a peripheral province of the Roman Empire became the focal point of a faith that would eventually reshape Western civilization. Let's place the episode in its proper context. On a Friday afternoon, probably in April of the year 30 or 33 AD, historians debate the exact date on the outskirts of Jerusalem. Three crosses stood on the hill of Golgotha with Jesus of Nazareth at the center, flanked by two common criminals. The presence of Roman soldiers was standard at these proceedings. The Gospels specifically mention a centurion supervising the execution, an experienced officer in command of approximately 80 men. Under his authority, other lesser-ranking soldiers carried out the physical tasks of crucifixion. Archaeologically, we know precisely what kind of spears were used by Roman infantry during this period. The pilum, the standard weapon of the Roman soldier, measured about 2 meters in total, with a wooden shaft and an elongated metal point, designed to penetrate shields and armor in combat. This same weapon, in the hands of that unnamed soldier, would serve a different purpose that day, to verify the death of a crucified man. The Gospels recount extraordinary phenomena associated with the death of Jesus. Darkness at midday, an earthquake, the veil of the temple being torn from top to bottom. These events deeply impacted the eyewitnesses, including the Roman centurion, who according to Mark exclaimed, "Truly this man was the Son of God." Mark chapter 15 verse 39. The gesture of piercing the side recorded only in the Gospel of John had a practical purpose within Roman procedure, to confirm that the crucified man had indeed died. The description of the blood and water that gushed out is consistent with modern medical knowledge about the physiological effects of crucifixion, where pericardial fluid, water, would mix with partially coagulated blood. For early Christians, this seemingly minor detail took on transcendental significance. John explicitly links the piercing of the side with Old Testament prophecies. "They will look on him whom they have pierced," Zechariah chapter 12 verse 10. The church fathers would later interpret the water and blood as symbols of baptism and the Eucharist, the foundational sacraments of the early church. What did the soldier experience at that moment? The Gospels do not say. Whether he was the centurion himself who proclaimed Jesus' divinity or a subordinate carrying out orders, we do not know. His immediate reaction, his thoughts upon seeing that unusual mixture of blood and water, remain the realm of speculation. What we can say with historical certainty is that Christianity, against all odds, spread rapidly throughout the empire in the decades that followed. From being a marginal Jewish sect, it transformed into a universal movement that would eventually reach even the ranks of the Roman army, the very institution that had executed its founder. Archaeological excavations at 3rd-century Roman forts such as Dura Europis clearly reveal the Christian presence among the troops. Fidus, Christian symbols, and even small house churches within military complexes bear witness to this gradual and steady penetration. By 313 AD, with the Edict of Milan, Constantine granted official tolerance to Christianity. Barely a century later, under Theodosius I, it became the official religion of the empire. The transformation was complete. The cross, an instrument of Roman torture, had become the universal symbol of a faith that had peacefully conquered its former persecutors. During this evolutionary process, figures briefly mentioned in the Gospels, such as the soldier with the spear, gradually acquired more defined contours in Christian tradition and devotion. The name Longinus, which first appears in apocryphal texts such as the Gospel of Nicodemus, 4th to 5th centuries, responds to the human need to give identity to significant figures in sacred narrative. The legendary elements that were added to his story, his partial blindness, his miraculous healing by the blood of Christ, his immediate conversion, and his subsequent martyrdom, reflect central theological themes of Christianity. Spiritual enlightenment from blindness to vision, personal transformation from executioner to witness, and testimony unto death, martyrdom. Throughout the centuries, the figure of Longinus has remained a powerful symbol of the possibility of conversion, even for those who would seem furthest removed from the faith. His legendary transformation from Roman soldier to Christian saint embodies the fundamental belief that no one is excluded from the redemption offered by Christ. This universal dimension of the Christian message is reflected in the wide geographical distribution of his cult. From the ancient churches of Rome and Constantinople to contemporary festivals in places as distant as the Philippines, the figure of Longinus continues to inspire reflections on spiritual transformation and witness to faith. The legacy of Longinus, or more precisely of the anonymous soldier who pierced the side of Jesus, transcends the strictly religious sphere to penetrate multiple dimensions of Western culture. His figure has inspired countless artistic expressions, from painting and sculpture to literature and cinema. In early Christian art, the depiction of the crucifixion initially avoided explicit details of suffering. Early Christians, probably due to the temporal proximity of the historical event and its traumatic nature, preferred symbols such as the lamb or the empty cross to evoke Christ's sacrifice. It was not until approximately the 5th century that direct representations of the crucifixion began to appear, including the soldier with the spear. One of the oldest examples is found in the ivory panels of the doors of the Basilica of Santa Sabina in Rome, c. 432 D.C., where an anonymous soldier appears with a spear pointed towards Christ. During the Byzantine period, the iconography became considerably standardized. The soldier with the spear, already identified as Longinus in the tradition, occupied a specific place in the representations of the crucifixion, usually to the right of Christ, from the perspective of the observer, often contrasted with the soldier who offered the sponge with vinegar. Western medieval art, particularly from the 11th century onwards, gave increasing prominence to the figure of Longinus. In works such as those by Yodo di Bondone, 1267-1337, the soldier is frequently depicted at the moment of his conversion, his expression filled with wonder and recognition as he grasps his spear. The Renaissance, with its emphasis on anatomical naturalism and psychological depth, produced some of the most striking depictions of Longinus. Matthias Grunewald's Crucifixion c. 1512-16 depicts a richly attired, almost aristocratic Longinus, whose elegant posture contrasts dramatically with the tortured body of Christ. Michelangelo Buonarroti included a figure traditionally identified as Longinus among the sculptures intended for his project for the tomb of Pope Julius II. His contemporary, Pietro Perugino, created one of the most moving depictions of the Roman soldier in his fresco Crucifixion of 1495 for the convent of Santa Maria Maddalena di Pazzi in Florence. Perhaps the most monumental depiction of Longinus is the colossal statue sculpted by Gian Lorenzo Bernini for one of the niches beneath the dome of St. Peter's Basilica in the Vatican. Completed in 1638, it depicts the saint in a moment of spiritual ecstasy, holding the lance while raising his face to the divine light. Literature has also found in Longinus a figure of fascinating complexity. During the Middle Ages, his story was incorporated into dramatic cycles such as the York Mysteries and the Sacramental Plays, where it frequently represented the moment of pagan conversion to the revealed divinity of Christ. In modern literature, Jean Lardigy's 1961 novel The Centurion offers a fictional but historically informed reconstruction of the life of a Roman officer in Judea who witnesses the crucifixion. Although not explicitly identified as Longinus, the protagonist embodies the spiritual transformation traditionally associated with this character. Poetry has also found inspiration in this figure. Irish poet William Butler uses the image of Longinus in Calvary, 1927, to explore themes of sacrifice, recognition, and personal transformation before the divine. In the realm of cinema, virtually every film about the life of Jesus includes the scene of the piercing of the side, although with widely varying treatments. King of Kings, 1961 by Nicholas Ray, The Passion of the Christ, 2004 by Mel Gibson, and The Birth Story, 2006 by Catherine Hardwicke present different interpretations of this pivotal moment. Beyond direct representations, the figure of the soldier with the spear has inspired profound reflections on universal themes. The unwitting witness to the transcendent, personal transformation before the divine, redemption even for those who participate in acts of cruelty. The dramatic contrast between the act of violence, the piercing of the side, and its spiritual consequences, revelation and conversion, perfectly embodies the central paradox of Christianity, how the instrument of suffering becomes a vehicle of salvation, how death gives way to new life. For contemporary believers, Longinus continues to symbolize the possibility of radical transformation, no matter how improbable it may seem. His evolution from Roman soldier to Christian saint, though historically uncertain, expresses the conviction that divine grace can reach even those who would seem furthest removed from it. On a broader symbolic level, the spear-piercing Christ's side has come to represent the moment of truth that pierces our own defenses and confronts us with deeper realities. As the poet T.S. Eliot wrote, "The wound is the place where the light enters," an insight that resonates deeply with the story of Longinus. No,